did. It's the butterfly.
Hey, 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 and welcome back to Soil Series. You're back on Soil Matters. This is Tanya, and in the studio today I have two guests. You looking fine. Before I get started, I'm going to acknowledge all of the indigenous peoples from all the lands on this planet, past, present and future. And at Soil Matters, we recognize that many lands have not been ceded. And today we're talking about soil and sex. Dirty topic. Hi guys. So we have, I'm not sure how, do you want to introduce each other?
No, I think we can do it ourselves, no?
All right, here we go. And pronouns.
Hello, I'm Jack. I go by pronouns he and she, and I am a sometimes artist. I work sometimes with vegetables, and I am kinky, and let's find out more later.
Hello, I'm Sorab. My pronouns are also he, she. What should I tell? Well, we're gonna talk about soil. Part of activism in different ways, but we can come up to that later, maybe also when it comes to an environment and earth.
And if you were gonna have sex with or on, in connection to a piece of soil or earth, what would this soily matter look and feel like?
The last time we were in Vondel Park, we tried to find spots where you could possibly have sex hidden, which was not very easy because the municipality, I think, cuts a lot of bushes. But I preferred a little bit hard, so I could like feel my body on it and be like having this feeling of leaning on earth and being part of it, and with branches and bushes around.
I would say I do like the moss. It's so soft. I just want somebody to push my face into it, you know, sometimes. Or I push somebody's face into it. It's kind of soft. But I like the branches thing because sometimes you know how you get scratches from it, and it's kind of, yeah. And I think while walking through Vondel Park, I was actually, what is, you know how sometimes you find the little prickly things, what do you call it again? I'm trying to think. I forgot the name of it. You know the one, the round balls, and then they stick on you? Kleeswortel. What is it now? Do you know that? But do you know the name of it? Yeah. And I always really like to, like, you know, I always like to, you know, kind of use it like sensation play and find all these little things and collect them. And then you can play with them actually quite good, you know. Yeah.
That's so creative. Yeah. Love it. Yeah. And like all of these, branches also a good idea. Yeah. Possibly even like stones or pebbles. Very interesting. I was thinking of like, maybe actually more like a rocky surface, and especially if the rocks have been heated by the sun, then this would be really, really good. And actually, I would love it if like no one was around, and then it's more of like a wide open space with just a lot of sun and rocks. Yes, sand. And I think after hearing like you both talk about the sticks and branches, then yeah, maybe also like using like rocks and different sharp or softer edges could be really interesting, and applying pressure in different places. So the two of you went on this cruising expedition. Do you want to share about that? And then I have a small quote like about queers and cruising, and then maybe we can read after that.
we tried, like we went there for the exhibition was actually to like see for spots, if we could find spots, and actually I sent Jack to all the branches. I was like, yeah, just go there and we'll see how it works, if I can see them on the other, if I was like on the road, which was like most of the time. Unless the bushes were like about 1 meter high and you would just lay down, it wouldn't be possible to be seen. And I think we found two spots. We marked it on our GPS for the next time to see. But it's I think it's gonna be very difficult, and especially during the day, which some people tried it too.
Yeah, I think we went, we were a bit late, right, for the cruising crew. which I think is actually just starting, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, why would you want to do it while the kids are around?
Yeah, totally.
You know, so.
Yeah, I wanted to actually ask you, like, what would be the problem if you were seen? And I think that this would maybe just be the problem that, like, I think, because I feel like no one's really actually going to say anything unless there's children. I don't know. I just feel like they'd just be like, oh, those people are doing it. Ha, 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 ha. And keep walking. All right. Fair.
Because Vondelpark is really like crowded, and there is like of course a lot of like police and this so to be a police people walking there, so the chances of being caught or having a fine is very high then during the day, especially now with Corona. Like there is in Amsterdam, you can have sex in public actually in parks, but it's like
sorry, you can or you can't?
Yeah, you can.
It's legal.
It's not.
Yeah. We've just got that confirmed.
Sex, public sex in Amsterdam is legal.
Just don't get caught. Don't.
Yeah. Just stay 1.5 meter distance, but that is maybe what you can get in trouble for, but the sex part, totally fine.
Yeah, they call it like the gedoogbeleid. It means like it's not really allowed, but it's not forbidden also. So they close their eyes for what is happening in the park. They know, but they are not doing anything about it. And in order to not do anything about it, like, it shouldn't be, like, totally visible. And what I was, like, mostly afraid was not the children, actually, or be seen by random people, because that's the whole funny, nice part about having sex in public, to be seen, or this excitement about it. But I was, like, very afraid you get caught and get a fine, and then with the whole shit around it.
Yeah, and then you have to deal with really, like, some responsibility or punishment or so. Optional question, but like, do either of you want to share? I guess you already just shared that. Yeah, but like your reasons for wanting to go cruising, or yeah, having sex in a public space outside. And yeah, for me, I think like it really calls me to have sex outside, and it's probably more this, and like I don't mind the risk, like, or the risk of the idea that people might see. I think that's, for me, is less the alluring part. For me, it's mostly like having sex outside, and then if you're in the city, you've got to be somewhere kind of prominent in the end. Oh, well, there's nowhere so private that's outside if you live in the city. So it's quite public and outside. Except for, like, in your garden.
Okay, so you mean that you want to have sex outside, but if you're not in the city, there's no trouble of being seen in that sense because you're outside, you're in nature, nobody will see you in that sense. Is that what you mean?
What's your question?
No, I'm just trying to understand, because you were saying that you want to have sex outside, like the idea of having sex outside.
But it also could be, it would be okay. Yeah, okay.
It's also about not, like, if you have sex outside, like the cruising thing, is that there are less rules. So you are obliged to less rules what you have in a date. When you go with someone, you bring someone at home. It brings a different atmosphere. While when you are outside, there is like more space. There is like more, you can breathe more. So there is more freedom. And if you go to a park and actually you try to find someone who wants to do the same, you don't have to talk with each other. You don't have to know each other. There can be anonymity, and you can just follow your desire and the desire of the other person and have sex with that. While when you date, there are other rules. There are much more rules applied. And I think that's also a part of, like, having tried to have sex outside. Like, I mean, for cis men, it's fucking obvious and super easy. But for queer people, it's different. So that's why this group tried to organize, like, this group flint cruising. But it's not working, because actually you talk with each other, you are there, and there is less privacy or anonymity about it. Well, the whole idea is about actually to go out and do whatever you want at that moment with the person who likes to do it.
What do you want to say? You want to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I find it also really interesting. I mean, to think about the history of cruising. I mean, the reason why you went outside was because you probably can't do it inside, you know? Mm. In some sense. I mean, it began with the gay men. I mean, where are you going to have sex inside, you know? Most of them married or something, you know? So you go out and search, you know? And I guess what draws me to...
You couldn't even go into the bar, perhaps.
No, and maybe you don't want to go into the bar because you want to be anonymous. Because you don't want to be caught, or, you know, you have your own life or something you're trying to not let other people know about, you know. And then I just wonder, how does that relate to now cruising, you know? I mean, how we cruise also. And I mean, I think about also, it's kind of nice to go outside also, because I actually really like watching also. I love watching. So I don't really need to do something, but I love to watch people, and I think that the beautiful part about cruising. And you know, if you don't get anything, at least you're outside and can go cruise something else, you know. Yeah, right. So,
or masturbate.
Yeah, masturbate, you know. You don't have this awkwardness where, as you say, you have a date and then you have to think, oh my god, what am I gonna do, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you're already outside, there's a lot of things to do, you know.
Yeah.
If nothing interests you, you can interest yourself.
Shall I start reading this quote? I'll tell you about the article afterwards, because I don't want to lose my place in the PDF document. Sorry. Tell you the author in a moment. But maybe, yeah, I'll start, and maybe you guys, if you want to, can read part. In Sex in Public, Warner and Berland, the authors, assert that making a queer world has required the development of kinds of intimacy that bear no necessary relation to domestic space, to kinship, to the couple form, to property, or to the nation. These intimacies do bear a necessary relation to a counterpublic. By removing sex from the protected confines of the private marital home, cruising contests normative concepts of intimacy and acceptable public behavior, the ideological distinction between public and private, legislatively codified as the right to privacy, validates certain types of sex, preferably heterosexual monogamy behind closed doors, while deeming others, like cruising in particular, inappropriately public and out of place. Yet this line fluctuates, reflecting levels of social tolerance towards homosexuality and the corresponding degree of government regulation of ostensibly private behaviours. Do either of you want to comment? Or shall I read a little bit more? I heard some, like, murmurs of agreement. Yeah. Maybe I'll keep reading. In reference to the term sex in private, self-described sex radical Patrick Califia Rice, formerly Pat Califia, warns, too narrow a definition of privacy would lead us with little or no right to be visibly gay, meet each other in public places, or participate in sex outside of monogamous, closeted relationships. As Califia's remark implies, the definition of privacy has important ramifications within the realm of intimacy and is central to how citizenship and its attendant rights and privileges are conferred as well.
Yeah. I think it's also important to know that it's not about, like, only heterosexuality. I think it's more about sex, that it's been dominated into a certain narrative, which is called heterosexuality, and it should be indoors. But if a woman and a man would be having sex, also cruising outside, it would be also condemned. So it's not about, like, only condemning heterosexuality as a norm. Of course, we can condemn that. But it's not about the genders, the two different genders who are having sex. It's more about the domestic and the capitalist system of, like, having this family tradition. So you keep things private. Like, you don't tell your secrets outside. You don't hang your dirty laundry outside. And sex is also, like, this dirty laundry you have to do inside. And I think that we have to be aware of, like, condemning one sexuality towards the other, because the whole perspective is about sex is not being something good. It's something you have to use for reproduction and sometimes for pleasure, but the pleasure is only for cis men and not for other genders or other people. So in that order, I agree mostly with the text, but I think that the note would be also to be careful that we would be all against heterosexuality, because then we would be also against the queer community who would identify themselves as bisexual and who wants to do also cruising, or a trans woman who wants to date cis men, and then we would be condemning them because they would perform so-called heterosexual normative relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fantastic. That was fantastic. Yeah, I really appreciate that. I really appreciate a lot of things you say there. And I think, I think you describe it super well. I really relate to the article with this emphasis on let's kind of take back the public. And this is, like, our space and we can access it. But also that, yeah, for whatever reason, I guess probably quite related to the history of cruising and, yeah, that homosexuality was condemned, but then this is a fine line between then drawing and saying, hey, heterosexual people, maybe cruising doesn't happen to be as strong in the heterosexual community, but it very well could be, and then it would be faced with a similar issue.
And maybe we don't know. Maybe it's happening, yeah. You know. Maybe we have to go out more. Yeah. 2 a.m. in the Vondelpark. I don't know. I heard this story, actually. Yeah. I don't know how real this. Maybe it's an urban legend or something, but somebody went to the park at 2 in the morning and then they saw a woman being chained to the gate of the Vondelpark. Wow. And it was a mixed crowd, actually. It was not like what you would call a visibly gay crowd or a queer crowd. So...
Yeah.
So I was just going to ask for some clarification. So it was some kind of group play scenario?
It sounds like it, yeah.
Like a gangbang, but then outside.
Yeah, at the gate of the Vondelpark. That's what I was thinking, exactly. Yeah, was it one of the, was it the north or south gate or a side gate? Like, we need to like add that to the map, add it to the map. All right, well maybe we can, do you want to add anything or maybe we'll play a song? You said that I'll set up a song.
Well, like we have, like of course, like when we look at the sex parties or whatever, when it comes to kink or that there are like more women visible. But let's be honest, like cis women are being condemned also to be have sex outside because she's being slut shamed or whatever. So in that particular way, I understand also that heterosexual relationship or sexuality people who are having sex outside would be less because cis women are also more vulnerable to have sex, like queer people to have sex outside and being condemned about it. And I think that's why I said, like, we should not condemn like heterosexuality, because there is also on the other part the oppressed partner who is needs to be, we need to see as a solidarity group or cis women in this world of patriarchal fucked up world.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, I just want to bring it in also because the first time I was in the dark room, I mean, it's supposed to be hot and stuff, right? But because I'm socialized to avoid dark places, because, you know, you don't go there because you might get attacked.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so this plays a part also, of course, as you say, slut shamed, you know, you put yourself out there, you just, you know, because you're seen as an object, a capital of sorts, and how you had to protect yourself in that sense. And I was reading something earlier today. I think it was Rita Mae Brown, who went to a gay sauna, and was talking about how it was for her to go to a gay sauna and getting grabbed by people, you know, because they just grope you. And she said that the difference of being groped in public and in this sauna was different. Because when you get groped in public, it's actually more aggressive because they, you know, it could lead to rape or whatever. And in this place, it was really about sex, right? Yeah. So you can actually say no and they will stop. Yeah. So that was quite interesting. But of course, I'm not saying everybody will experience it this way. You know, but it is like a different language of consent, you know? Yeah. Whereas when you're on the street, it's a different language of defense or...
I think it comes, it's like kind of comes back to what you said about the social norms that we follow. Like if you're on a date, then you can't just start groping someone and also understand, okay, we're all just going to consent, like we're all going to express our consent or not express or like express our consent or non-consent. And I guess when the queer community, there is maybe a certain level generally of education about this, and so people, there's a certain culture about that, but then out on the street it's not the norm you're definitely crossing someone's boundary if you start groping someone. And and I think when you're cruising, then you just have, it's simply more about asking consent and checking in on that and the physical practice, and we cool. I'm going to play a song and we'll be back in a moment. Hey, hey, we're back. So, Jack, you were just talking about, it was in cruising scenario situations, right? About this like fisting scenario. Do you want to explain?
Okay, I think just to refer back, I guess, to Patrick Khalifa, and how they mention about that dykes and gays were actually fucking a lot. And they like a lot of dykes at that point were fisting gay men because they had smaller hands. And that's what they needed, you know? And I just found that really interesting because we're so kind of still stuck with the idea that all this, you know, with sexuality and how it's kind of segregated, actually. Yeah. And we don't give place to the fact that we are actually fucking across all these lines that we think, you know, yeah. we are. Yeah. And also mentioning also how a lot of actually trans guys are hooking up with cis gay men also.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that maybe we actually should talk more about this, you know, overlap
yeah.
and crossing this kind of boundaries rather than sticking to, you know, the fixed ideas we have about each other's sexualities,
yeah.
actually.
Yeah, I think so also because, like, it brings me back to 3 years ago when I started to, like, come out of the closet for my parents and everything. But before I started to do that, I found out that we are boxing too much, and in that boxing there are no holes. If you look at the boxes, there are no holes from one to another to like be able to communicate with each other. And if we penetrate through those boxes of heterosexuality, homosexuality, bisexuality, etc., that people are actually more fluid than we think. And I think that also in the 70s and 80s that people were more fluid about those things, that the community was more like as a whole community and not like segregated as we are now in like fighting for the battle of who has like this championship of the worst in the the worst oppression and to fight for. Well, if and I think that if we look at, especially at genitals and gender, how it's being connected also towards trans people, but also to gay men, that we have this thing about like cis men. So it's like all cis men, the gays are the same. And while I think that they are more open up into have connection with another person and another person's personality or their gender instead of the genitals. And I think that the focus within the queer community, sometimes it feels like that the focus is so much on the genital and the gender, and it's being very connected to each other, while I'm like thinking about like we wanted to change the whole gender construction. It's okay to have genders, actually, but the problem became when we assigned a gender to a human body. We can have different genders. We can even have a new construction with 100 types of genders. But the moment we connect them with a body, then it becomes problematic. Then we say this is the norm and this is how we live in. And I think that we have to loosen up and also try to be less judgmental towards another community and especially gay community, to be like, yeah, they're the cis men, so they have the power, and giving also the power to men and also associating that through genitals, like the penis, and thinking that the penis is the problem. Well, I'm like, no, it's just like a little thing with muscles around it, and it goes up and it goes down, and that's it. It's the person behind it who's doing something with the penis.
Totally, or the culture or the society, rather, that raises the person. Yeah, so when you're talking about like this obsession with genitals, you mean that like the original sex of the body, that you're saying that like maybe the queer or lesbian community is more preoccupied with that than the gay community. Yeah, I guess like perhaps the gay community, the male gay community, like started. It was a lot more common, like the drag queen movement was a lot more prevalent, like in like many places around the world, perhaps than like a similar movement in like the lesbian community. And so for that reason, maybe I could understand like that point, that they're a bit more open to then just accepting the expression of the person of whatever gender they want to express. But I'm not sure if they're... But then it's still very binary gendered.
Yeah, but the queer community... that the queer community does it too, because if we say we need to bash the patriarchy, but we have embodied the patriarchy by the cis men, so all cis men suddenly are becoming a problem, including gays. While we talked before in the radio that also gay people have to go and be hidden, and it's not easy for gay men as well to come out. So if we embody the same system of like gender and embodiment of like how oppression works and how which kind of body it does it and which doesn't, of course there are privileges that cis men have, but I think that we should be careful on boxing people on the same way the system is doing it, because we boxing and we narrow down actually our own community and also within the fight we are fighting. Like I said, like my sister is a heterosexual woman. She thinks. But she wants to like come out. She wants to explore her sexuality. But she's being like in this box of like cisgender heterosexual woman. So she's like, oh my God, what should I do? But I do want to explore, but I don't know how and there. And everybody's like, yeah, but she's a cisgender heterosexual woman. And I'm like, let her the fuck explore. And sexual liberation was in first place not to like have more boxes of like how kind of what kind of genders we have, what kind of sexualities we have. Sexual liberations meant actually coming out of all the fucking boxes. And I think with now with the queer community, you see it also with trans people. When we talk about trans community, for example, I haven't seen much trans men being in the society, within the community. Most of them, especially when they are passing, they don't even enter because they are being seen as the cis man, so they are the enemy. And therefore, you see that cis men, men or non-binary who are more masculine, don't enter within the queer community. So we actually push our own members of our community. And I've seen it myself. People called me masculine. I don't the fuck know what masculinity does. But we talk the whole time about gender expression. Well, what the gender expression I have is apparently masculine. But doesn't mean that it represents me. And nevertheless, I've been put in a box where I've never felt at home. And therefore, didn't feel comfortable within the community because it was, again, narrowed down to cis man. And we can use different words. We can use femininity, masculinity. But you cannot fool me that they have the same identical, basically, characteristics that we have given to cis men and cis women. But it's more like vocabulary progressive 2020, say masculine and femininity. For me, I'm like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, so then, okay, so this, perhaps through the cruising and through this, like, having sex in this alternative venue or place, this, like, place that's kind of dirty, if you want, and, like outside of the norm, then, like, maybe also this is a link between these communities, which are a bit more segregated. If you go into a bar or so, then it's still this segregation. But perhaps like when you take away these exteriors and like these reminders also of these separations, perhaps we can experiment with joining the communities in these sexual acts, which is very, very cool. I feel a strong call to do more research and participate more in cruising in Amsterdam. Just feel like I'm wasting my time on the radio. Yeah, exactly. We're spreading the word. We're getting the numbers up. That's the other. Okay, so with this cruising idea, or like that Flink started this group, and it's a tough one. Maybe I'm saying the wrong vocabulary. All right. There's this group going on. I guess it's a tough one because I think it's great that it is like this closed group, because semi-closed group, because then it's got some kind of base. It's got some kind of like some kind of members or followers that are a bit committed to the cause. And so that's really cool because that's a starting point. The unfortunate thing is it's not anonymous, and it's maybe not as like open and transparent to like the wider community as it could be. So I guess I feel like it should be kind of more like or the information should be passed on in some kind of more public or anonymous way so that others can be also involved. So it's not only like this one closed group. But that would be my suggestion. You agree? All right. And then let's see. Shall we? It's a bit of maybe. I have another quote that I'd like to read. Do either of you want to read it, or if I pull out the quote? All right, hang on. Okay. Oh wait. First, let's acknowledge the article that I was reading from. So it's called "Cruising and Queer Counter Publics: Theories and Fictions" by Jennifer Elizabeth Moon, and it was published. Oh, it's part of a dissertation actually. In someone's PhD thesis and published in 2006. So congratulations, Jennifer Elizabeth Moon. I reckon she must have, right, to do the... Yeah, we can contact her for some tips on our cruising community here in Amsterdam, perhaps. Or maybe she can join us, or he, she, or they, or so on, for our for another episode. Okay, so now I'm reading from Donna Haraway's book, Staying with the Trouble. Chthonic ones are beings of the earth, both ancient and up to the minute. I imagine Chthonic ones as replete with tentacles, feelers, digits, cords, whiptails, spider legs, and very unruly hair. Chthonic ones romp in multi-critter hummus, but have no truck with sky-gazing homo. Chthonic ones are monsters in the best sense. They demonstrate and perform the material meaningfulness of earth processes and critters. They also demonstrate and perform consequences. Chthonic ones are not safe. They have no truck with ideologues. They belong to no one. They writhe and luxuriate in manifold forms and manifold names in all the airs, waters, and places of earth. They make and unmake. They are made and unmade. They are who are. No wonder the world's great monotheism, in both religious and secular guises have tried again and again to exterminate the Chthonic ones. The scandals of times, called the Anthropocene and the Capitalocene, are the latest and most dangerous of these exterminating forces. Living with and dying with each other potently in the Chthonocene can be a fierce reply to the dictates of both Anthropos and Capital. So yeah, I just wanted to read it out, I guess, as... it's a bit of a recognition of other species and other beings that like exist on the planet that are out there in the ecosystem that we're going to interact with when we're cruising, whether we like it or not. Yeah. And maybe we are Chthonic. It's a word that Donna Haraway came up with, and it comes Chthulocene. Well, Haraway says it's a simple word. It's a compound of two Greek roots, kathon and kainos, that together name a kind of time place for learning to stay with the trouble of living and dying in responsibility on a damaged earth. Kainos means now, a time of beginnings, a time for ongoing, for freshness. And so this word, from what I've read like a little bit more of this book, it's about, yeah, we're in a fucked up situation right now in this place of capitalism, of the Anthropocene, of like climate change. But it's like, but just to sit with that, to work with it, to continue the work without that, this kind of so many things going wrong with the world completely overwhelming us. So be able to accept it, to accept like the shittiness of the world without letting it overwhelm you. Yeah, why not? I thought that was really like caring. I really appreciated that because I find it overwhelming and like sometimes I just feel so like pathetic in life because of the state of the world.
Of course, it's. I think for some people or some groups of people, it's going to be easy to accept things for the way they are. But if you're in one of the marginalized groups of the society, it's not something you can accept because you deal with it every day. And it's a fucking struggle and it's also a fight. And it's not like only I've gone now through lots of my traumas and I try to heal, try to stand back on my feet. But it's... And I try to accept the world for what it is, but it doesn't make it a better world or an acceptance world for me to actually heal. It makes it even unfair. It brings more grief. It brings more sadness. And basically, what people say is like acceptance of how it is accepting to be unhappy through your whole life and that you have to gonna struggle your entire life. I don't know if I want to accept something like that because if that's how the life of people are to like actually fighting against every time an injustice or accepting and swallowing it, that's not a life. It's like fighting against surviving instead of living while white people are like living and they can like enjoy and have fun and everything like that. So for me, it's a very difficult way of accepting the world the way it is because I'm suffering every day, every fucking single day, and I don't want to do that. So for me, it's very difficult to look at the world and be like, I'm gonna accept it the way it is. Of course I'm gonna try to change whatever it is, but I'm not gonna like fight every fight because I have to look at my own boundaries and see how much energy I have left. But I cannot look at the world and be okay with it.
I don't think she's saying to look at the world and be okay with it. I think she's more saying, like, care for yourself and like, the world sucks and care for yourself and don't let it take you down.
Of course, but there is a privilege here in it, eh? Like, white people can be like, oh, I'm going to go to yoga and have my veggie smoothie in the morning and I'm going to accept the world the way it is and I'm not going to change it. Super nice, but
I don't think she's saying not to work.
Like, no, like, you can work. Like, I understand that you have to take care of yourself, but for some people, for BIPOC people, actually, it's very difficult to take care of yourself in a world like this. So in order of, like, self-compassion and, like, taking care of yourself, that's already a fucking day job because most of us don't have the privilege to take care of ourselves because you have to work, you have to earn money, you have to have a housing and food and drinks and stuff like that. Well, for white privileged people, it's a common thing. And there is also a difference of who is fighting against it and who has the privilege to be like sometimes taking time for themselves and while the world should be the other way around. That BIPOC people get sometimes the time to rest, to actually recover from all the hostile and shitty things to be able to fight again and continue their lives.
Yeah, I guess from what I've read, I think I would say the two of you are in agreement. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry to say that also, but I totally, like, agree with everything you say. Okay. And also agree with Donna Haraway, and I think she does great work, but I'm also, maybe one day I will realize otherwise.
I think she is also very privileged.
Yeah, so. And I think it's not whether what she means at the end, later, if you read more, it is just a trigger, you know? When if you tell people, if you're angry at the injustice in the world, people ask you to, oh, come on, chill out. It's like this. That's you can't change. I know. But I'm just saying it's a trigger. It becomes. I'm not saying that's what she's saying. But, you know, it's a reaction sort of to that, I think. And And yeah, and maybe we have to read a bit further, but I think I just want to recognize the fact that sometimes it is just a trigger of being told like, oh, you know, just stop, take a break, when you can't actually take a break, you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, maybe a huge part of this book is saying, like, to care for yourself, because you are doing all this work and you are, in the end, the person that deserves the care. Yeah.
But since she demonstrates from a privileged position, she has no fucking clue what other people, groups of the society are actually facing their own lives. So it's from her perspective, her privileged perspective of being able and having the opportunities to do those things, it's easy to say. Well, like I said, for most people in the Western societies, BIPOC community, there is no space or time to breathe and to recover. And of course, we love ourselves, and that's why we fight against it, because if you don't have time to sit still and to actually recover, so the only thing you can do, that's what trauma is you freeze, or you fight, or you run. You can't run, so or you freeze, or you fight. And that's what the three components are. So, like, saying, like, accepting things, and like Jack said, like, it's also something triggering, because it's very difficult to accept, and I think that she doesn't want to say it. But the funny part, like, when it struck me that she said that this chutuluns, whatever word it is, yeah, a simple word. It's compound of two Greek roots. So she is centralizing her whole theory also from Western society and not from other things. And it's like, for her, it's a simple two words, because it's her common language. But who says that Europe is a central side of the world that we have to say it's a simple world?
Yeah, totally. Fair enough. I think, like, she does make space for other groups. And I don't think, like, she's out there trying to say, like, her voice is, like, the end. And she's trying to, yeah, be part of the conversation. I don't think she's saying she's the full stop. But, yeah, she could totally make more space and find better resources, or not better, but other resources or other inspiration. Yeah, and I think all of those criticisms are... I think she does great work, and I think all of your, like, points are also relevant. So I guess, like, I think it's great she's part of the conversation, and, yeah, she can... people can respond to that, and we'll see what she learns and, yeah, where it goes. that was not at all where I expected it to go. That's really great. Yeah, really nice, really nice. And yeah. So, but what about the part of, like, do you have an idea of when we're out there cruising, of how to, like, pay recognition to nature, or to like the plants and the soil and the microorganisms around us, and like, are those beings, like, how can we feel them or understand, like, what they are welcoming and what's good for them in their space? Do either of you have any thoughts about that? Or I can say something. Yeah. I guess, like, this is just, like, my personal idea. But I think, like, there's a large part of just going there and doing the practice. It will come. And maybe, like, it's a bit overwhelming the first time or so, and you don't pick up on everything. But I think the longer that you're out there, the more that you show up and you do it and you're there, that then you start to notice different things. And maybe then you're going to notice, like, the grass here is just being trodden away, so I'm not going to go there anymore. And, like, I'm going to let that grass grow back, or, like, this shrub is already really suffering, so maybe I'm not gonna lean up against it this time, and, like, I'm gonna go somewhere else. And then, yeah, but I think also, Like soil kind of doesn't love to be over trampled on, but it does love to be, it doesn't mind like being aerated a bit. So then I guess it's like thinking about all of it's kind of, if you just maybe just to ask the question already will bring a bit of awareness. And it's a bit of a naive thing to say maybe, and it's like can definitely be developed further, this idea. But I guess I would say like maybe that's just the first thing, is like be there and try and listen, and you'll probably pick up something, maybe not everything.
I mean, I remember when I was growing up, if you pee outside, you always have to ask for permission. And you look around and you don't immediately pee. You'd be like, hello, hi, I'm here. I really need to pee. Is it okay if I pee here? You know? Because you understand there are spirits around, that there are living beings around. So I think that is the first step too. I think is to go there and to maybe ask for permission and state your intention or something. Mm-hmm. I think that is a good way. It's like respect, I guess, for or consent, or just to understand that you are not there just alone, you know? Yeah. And I agree, the fact that, you know, I mean, with cruising, it's like going back to that place that you know, that you find out, okay, yeah, that place really fits my body. I can really lean on, you know, or you learn about these things. And I think, as you say, as you go there more often, you cannot help but actually have a relationship. Yeah. Really. Unless you just are so closed off, you know. Yeah. I mean, if you're open enough, it is not possible to develop. You know, at one point, if you go to the same place, you somehow, maybe you don't say it out loud, but you do say some kind of like a greeting of some sort. At least I find myself doing this, you know. Yeah. Like, hey, I see that your hair's grown or something, you know. You're a bit taller now, you know. Yeah. And I also like the fact when I was reading Breeding Sweet Grass, it was really interesting to try, how do you get to know like a plant or a living being or somehow? Like instead of thinking of its name, like its so-called name, you actually start describing it. So you actually observe it. Like you're the one with that really soft, furry, purple, long thing, you know? Hi again. So you teach yourself to observe, I guess, in that sense. And then you will also observe that maybe you are taking too much space. You already go to that place and say you damaged the ground already, or you step on too much grass and kill all these flowers here, you know. And then you'll be like, okay, don't do that again, you know.
I think it's what you said, like it's about respect. If we have respect for ourselves as human beings, but not put ourselves on the higher, on top of the hierarchy, but see ourselves as part of the universe, as part of the of this planet, and being just one of the living beings, like so many others, you would also treat the plants, the soil, the world in a different way. Like you said, like if I would go there, I would look around and see if there is nothing there, like bugs or whatever, not just for myself, but also for the living being, be under my weight. But also like the branches and everything like that, because what if you want to do it another time, but maybe you don't want to do it another time. It's just like paying respect for the amount of nature we have, because there is not much left around us. And if we start to take care about also look in a different way, well, like you said, like describe things. There is like this beautiful book of about non-violent communication. As they say, I have never seen a lazy person. I have seen a person sitting in a couch. So just what if we just look at the things the way they are, without judging, without having this whole perceiving things on how we see the world, and just see the things for who they are. And I think our perspective is going to change a lot more, and then we would see things for what they are.
Yeah, I'm also going to talk, I guess, about this exercise that I did with some people when there was Bound. This is like a QTBPOC BDSM festival. And I found it really interesting how it brought it into BDSM, because there was an exercise where you walk around and somebody will ring a bell, and then you look at that person. You don't exchange any words, but you look at this person for quite some time, and then they would say like, okay, just imagine this person. Imagine all the trauma they've been through. Imagine the people that came before them. You know? And after that, you feel that you have no right to judge anybody anymore. Yeah. And I guess this is through the lens of, imagine all this, the nature around us. I mean, how much older they are than us, you know, and that respect. And I just find this also really, I guess, yeah, I mean, in some cultures, we really respect elders, you know? And I think we also have to go back to that kind of thing where you have to respect people who came before you and that they do no more. And, you know, like there's more than humans, like plants, animals, rocks, trees. I mean, they know more than you. And so maybe we should go there, you know, and see them as siblings, older siblings. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and if we try and also the nature that we can't see, like the space we are in now. And what's happened here to the nature. Okay, maybe I play a song. Yeah, feeling it? All right. See you soon. Yo, yo. So we're back, and we're kind of feeling in the mood to discuss. Feel free to text in your favorite BDM practice in soil. I feel like I haven't experimented enough, and I'd love to hear your tips. But do you want to, do either of you want to like throw some things out there? I reckon mud is just, well, mud is the obvious one. So I stole it already. Just rolling around in some mud.
Yeah, you can do the same with sand. I think it's even, I think it's still less practical as mud. With people who has vaginas, so but you can do it. It's very soft. It's very nice. Also, not during the day. and I think what I also like or thought about was like doing it in a tree instead of, it's like part of the nature. It's very old, ancient nature. Actually, carries so much information. Actually, a tree with it, and it would be so nice to actually. Feel the vibe and the energy of the tree within the bodies.
So do you mean you want to be tied up to a tree?
Up.
Yeah, up, up, yeah, 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 up, up, up. Yeah, up there, yeah. Yeah.
And how would you feel about like a heavy or like a thick-ish, heavy-ish branch then being kind of rubbed up and down your body, like rolled?
I have not experienced it yet, but I think it would be nice because then you get maybe also a little bit of pain play, which I like. Oh my god, my whole thing is online.
No. Sorry, what? I was like, what's going on? What's going on? We were in the zone. We were in the zone. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because I like maybe some pressure and some sharpness and also the wisdom of the tree entering the body, the feeling of the tree. I also feel like some heavy stones and applying pressure could also be really kind of soothing.
Yeah, you were talking earlier also about the warm stones, no? I mean, just nice, no?
To the warm stones.
Yeah, I just go, well, I can imagine you collect some stones, lay them in the sun, and then you can apply them on. Yeah. Yeah, big stones.
I just got rid of this feeling of like having concrete on my chest and not being able to breathe. So I would maybe would try to like, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I understand stones, yeah. I tried the candles though, like with heat. I didn't like it.
Can you elaborate?
Like you have like these special candles where you light up and then you put on your body, And the funny part is like it doesn't do anything for the first 2 seconds, but then it's gonna feel burned, and it's just, and if you have the heavy ones, it's gonna take longer for the burn to feel on your skin. But I know maybe because my skin is very sensitive, but other people would understand why they like it. Like the same with needle play, I don't like it. But I like the branches.
What about submersion, say in like mud or water, some other watery material? That could also be something.
Yeah. I love water. I love it. It's just amazing for the body. But also like mud, if you like, you use it as cream, natural cream on the body to like massage it on it. That's amazing. I think that's amazing. Scrub with sand.
And then we put you in water. Yeah. You know? Yeah, but I think it's also interesting, you know, when you do submersion, I mean, because you feel also being held together, but then you also have that possibility of doing a breath play. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm. Mm. So, you can, I guess you can do it with a partner or somebody who kind of holds you down and then come up.
Yeah.
It's also this kind of endurance kind of thing for yourself, you know?
Yeah.
To see how much you can take. And I think that's a very, I guess, really interesting part for me with BDSM, because you know how we always have to watch our boundaries, but we always kind of cross them, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think sometimes in BDSM, you cross them to know where,
yes, where
the next line is. Yeah. And that I find actually really kind of empowering.
And what about, do you think, like, the throwing of mud?
Yeah.
Playful, you could, right? Yeah.
It's also part of being playful, you know?
Yeah. I mean, think about it. I mean, it's also, I mean, BDSM is not all about pain or torture or anything. It's about sensation. It's also about feeling yourself, you know? It's about coming back to yourself. And actually, that's why it's actually so healing.
Yeah.
If you do it. You know, with trust. Yeah, because, you know, you can learn to be a child again.
Exactly.
You know, you can just pretend, I'm going to be 5 years old, I'm going to play this mind, I'm going to throw it at you, you know.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
It's about finding that place in yourself again with other people, yeah?
It's about getting into your body, but also, like, being on a joyful way. And maybe for the start to, like, because sometimes we think about BDSM because it contains so much rules, which I understand, of consent and like not triggering or traumatizing other people. But in order to keep it also light and joyful and to come into your body instead of like keeping busy with our minds with all those rules, because they make it also very difficult to come into your body because you don't want to cross other lines and you don't want to cross your lines and you're like, what if questions? Well, if you start to play in like very sensitive, not sensitive, like onschuldig, innocent way, then you can come back easier in your body to go actually and have the next steps. And I think when you talk about boundaries and like setting next boundaries, if we are able to do that with people we trust, I think it's fucking empowering. It actually also helps people who have traumas.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the best exposure. But do just with trusted people.
We repeat, do it with a trusted person. No, it's for real. Because you can get really hurt from it. Mm-hmm. And if you want to deal with trauma and go back being hurt, it's not cool. No.
Yeah. So, trusted person, consent, talk about boundaries, also be playful, and just enjoy. Yeah. Okay, so we've got the breath play, submersion in water, throwing of the mud, being in mud, rolling around in sand, sticks, perhaps like some whipping. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or you can just make somebody walk through some like thorns.
Exactly.
Go there now, walk through it now.
That's right. And you said these other spiky things that get caught on your clothing.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah. And other plants, Some are sharper, some are softer.
Braneto is the best.
Sit down. Yeah, no scratching. I'm just going to put one brand nettle under your armpit. We've got a taker. We've got a taker. I've been growing my hair all my life for this moment. Also smells. Yeah, this will also be a huge part of the experience. Either horrible smells or wonderful smells.
Yeah, it makes me think because now the first plan I think about is the valerian root, you know, because it smells a bit like smelly shoes. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, yeah, if you have like that kind of smell fetish. I love smelling things, actually. I actually taught myself not to smell everything I see. So.
Keep it for my fetish partner.
No, because, you know, you're like a weirdo if you like.
Oh. Or it was just taking up too much time in life.
Oh.
Yeah. I did the same actually, but then my dad was like, do not smell everything. And I was like, what is wrong with smelling something? I really didn't understand. But it's like, well, our taste is actually our smell. So everything we smell is like something we can... gives us our desires, like, oh, you feel disgusted about it or ashamed or whatever, and it's actually part of our feeling, and one of the important senses is actually the smell.
Yeah, I think it really links very strongly to like memory or like the feeling that was there with the memory. It really, I think, for me triggers the sense of the time or the sense, like the emotion or so. Okay, so if you're to have sex outside, say BDSM, practice some BDSM, and it's soily, same, how would you like it to smell? What would be your preference? Any interest? Rose.
Roses. The rose garden in the Vondel Park is like giving me like this spirit of like feeling so feminine.
Well, I'll see you in May next year in the Rose Garden.
Well, I don't like horse shit, so I'm sure about that. But I'm actually just like the smell of nature, which you don't have much in Amsterdam or the Netherlands. But just the feeling that there is like breeze of something what is natural, you know, green, something green would be nice.
Yeah, or when the wind blows, you know, and then it changes also, you know, something. Yeah, but I'm actually quite keen on smelly things. So not roses. But also not horse shit also. So I'm a bit in between, I guess. I mean, I still like the smell of dirt also, actually, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like the smell of dirt.
Yeah.
But yeah, not so much the smell
dirt.
Of manure.
Dirt.
Dirt.
Oh, okay. No.
Yeah. Okay. Next level.
Yeah, just trying to be really intense. Yeah, you know.
whoa. All right, you got it. So, I think for me, I would love the smell of something quite strong and fresh, like eucalyptus or tea tree. I think I would. What the fuck? What? No, because it's like a rougher environment. Though roses are a pretty rough environment, all those thorns. That's serious. Respect. Yeah, a lot of respect. A lot of respect for someone who has sex in a rose garden. Yeah. Got a taker.
You can use everything around you. Like, people think BDSM is like you have to like have this box of like lots of toys. I think you can use everything for everything you want, because it's about sensations of your body. So if you see like a little twig or a branch or whatever, and you're like, oh, I want to hit with it, and it's just soft and it's just, it tinkles, that's already fine. You don't need to like have a real whip of 60 euros
real.
Yeah, because like people think, and it contains also like this classism of things of like people who can afford can do BDSM and other people who are poor cannot do BDSM, which is fucking not true. You can use whatever the fuck you have in your house and outside to use to perform BDSM, to just have pleasure and sensations in your body.
Should do a cruising BDSM workshop. Like a BDSM workshop with things that you can find in nature.
Yeah, and talking about that, I guess talking about tools, materials, and what you get. And actually, yeah, you can actually make a lot yourself, you know? I had a friend who was trying to make rope from brand nettle stems. So there you go. Wow. Project.
That is beautiful.
Yeah, that is really, really beautiful. I mean, he showed me what he was making. I'm like, yeah, I would probably cut into your skin, so maybe some more time. But, you know, it's also this kind of, I think, how we can relate to BDSM with nature, about making, you know, the materials yourself from nature. And, yeah.
Yeah, and then feel still connected to the nature, which is so nice when we live in the city and we want to be connected more with the outside and nature, and either use it when we're outside or when we're back at home.
Jack is very good also in making things, so what would you make?
Jack. The creative one.
Yeah, handy. I use those little balls to make something. Let me think about it, yeah? I just collect more of them and then see. But I mean, they're not painful or anything. They're more like nature's Velcro. I feel. Yeah. But I think it's kind of, yeah, okay. Oh my God, I'm going to
have a stall at the Nordermarkt.
Yeah,
organic BDSM.
Oh my God. I think we're on to something. That's it, going to quit my job.
Yeah, you've collected everything ethically with consent.
Yeah, with consent. Yeah.
We're going to ask the nature, and it's going to give us, because we are awesome, and we haven't the right to have it because we haven't had so much from this fucking world. So yeah, I agree. Yeah. We're going to have our store. But we have also Fight Club. So.
Oh yeah, promote.
Promote Fight Club. Yes. So, dear people, we're going to be soon starting Fight Club again. It's a sex positive. It started as a sex positive festival, but we're going to organize some nice and sweet workshops. About body painting, pain play, and so much pleasure. Just Facebook us on or Instagram, right? No, no, Facebook. Facebook Fight Club is like FITE, and then dash, like how you say, yeah, and then QLUB Fight Club, the way you say it, and you can fight with your tools.
I'll put a link in the show. Awesome. Love it. Okay, so we just have like a few minutes left. Choices are, we can read about a bit about asking consent from the Indigenous author Robin Wall Kimmerer. Sorry. Or... we could read a little bit more from the article about queers and public cruising. The article? All right. Let's find it. Hang in there. So now we've totally lost the spot. But I think that was a good part, an interesting part of the essay. Shall we start here? Does anyone else want to read? Okay. Oh yeah, here it is. This is what we just read, so we could just continue from there. Do you want to read?
Okay, where?
Where is it? Okay. Yeah. With cruising, you mean?
Yeah, with cruising.
I try my best, yeah? With cruising, intimacy is redefined and experienced within brief moments of intensity, in which one or both partners allow themselves to become sexually vulnerable to a stranger. Often, an expression of one's most deeply felt and difficultly articulated needs. Sex is a form of intimate self-exposure, and cruising creates a context in which such moments are dispersed among different people, in public rather than in private. and at intermittent intervals. Warner describes the nature of these intimacies. When gay men or lesbians cruise, when they develop a love of strangers, I love strangers, they directly eroticize participation in the public world of their privacy. Contrary to myth, what one relishes in loving strangers is not mere anonymity nor meaningless release. It is the pleasure of belonging to a sexual world in which sexuality finds an answering resonance not just in one another, but in a world of others. Strangers have an ability to represent a world of others in a way that one sustained intimacy cannot. Yeah, yeah. I agree. Yeah. Woo. Yeah. Applauso. Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes. Cool.
All right, I feel like we came. Just that was a really nice point. Yeah, perfect, perfect. Yeah, I'm glad we... really good. I'm glad we read that. So then I'll just say... a huge thank you to you both for coming on, and I had a lot of fun today. And so thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting us.
You're very welcome. And then I'll just say some upcoming events that on Wednesday, there is I know. It's either I don't want to get the title wrong. No, I don't want to get it wrong. It's Earthing. Earthing with Marsha Roo at the Mama Barranca statue, which is not near the Vondel Park statue. I mean, the Mr. Vondel statue in Vondel Park this Wednesday, September 9th. And exactly. And I'll see you in the bushes afterwards. And then we're having, I'm also part of a workshop where we're going to look at...
green and orange.
I'm also going to, I'm part of a workshop on the 19th of September at Amstel Park, where we're going to look at the soil labeling classification system and how do you deal with soils when it's in between two labels. And I think that's about it. And I'll see you next Friday on Soil Matters. And thank you so much for listening. And have a great weekend. Enjoy. I hope it's not too rainy, and I hope you have a great time.